Welcome to Hallis Intrigue. I'm Jason Leisure. I'm here with Mark Potash. We're going to talk about the Bears' eight-game losing streak, and now the Super Bowl contending Lions come to Soldier Field on Sunday. All that and more on Hallis Intrigue. Mark, it's not going well for the Bears. It's not where they thought they'd be. It's not where most people thought they'd be. They're 4-10. A lot of parts of the plan have gone wrong, and now there really isn't anything in the standings to play for in these final three games. Detroit on Sunday, and in Chicago, the Seahawks in Chicago on Thursday after that, and then the season finale in January at Green Bay. What is the purpose of these last three games as far as you can see it?
I think the main purpose, maybe the only purpose, I think is to get Caleb Williams through this season unhurt.
Well, I mean, that's a job.
Right.
That may not.
I'm not kidding.
I mean, he got beat up pretty good. He's been sacked more than any quarterback in the league. And some of that is on him. There's only so much he can control. He cannot control the poor protection on the offensive line. And you finally heard Thomas Brown say it Monday night in Minnesota, what a problem that is and how you can't throw downfield if you don't have protection. Everybody saw how much Kieran Amagaji struggled. I would expect he's starting again on Sunday against the Lions. And while I understand that from a long-term play, I don't think that's what's in the best interest of Caleb Williams right now over Larry Borum, who probably won't be on the team next year, but is better today. At the time that we are recording this podcast, Larry Borum is better than Kieran Amagaji, and that factors significantly into Caleb Williams' situation. I would start Borum for that reason. But Caleb takes a lot of hits. Some of it is from indecision on his part. Some of it is from the protection issues. How concerned are you that either he doesn't make it healthy all the way to the end, or it just becomes so untenable that they sit him to protect him?
I think it's an issue. I talked to you, we were at the game the other night in Minnesota, and mentioned, I said, you know, should they, something I normally don't really think about late in the game, should they even bring him back for the next series? Because just the way things are trending, it's like you fear that something bad is going to happen. Now, Braxton Jones did practice in full, so I think they anticipate him being clearing the concussion protocol. So you might, but then you've got Tevin Jenkins missing practice or being predicted as
he's got a calf injury.
So you could have problems there. But no, the point is, I think it's this, is that there's not enough happening on offense to get excited about it's worth the risk at this point. It's more of a commentary on where the offense is heading than anything else. There's usually you say, well, he's got to play. I mean, normally people say, do you protect the quarter? No, he's got to play. He's got to learn. Well, the way they're going right now, I don't think there's all that much to get out of playing. They're on a treadmill right now offensively, if not regressing. And so I think I'm looking more towards just get him through the season and move on, get the new coach, whatever, and move on. And 3 weeks is a long way to go. But I have to admit, I fear that. And when you ask me, what is the thing? That's the first thing I think of, is making sure this quarterback, who this is the longest a quarterback's gone at the start of a season in a long time for the Bears. I can't remember what the date was, but even 14 games is a lot. So they've been fortunate so far, and I think it's, like I said, it's more a commentary on where they're not going offensively. That's probably the second biggest issue is you know, what's happened to this offense in the two games that Thomas Brown has been on the sideline as opposed to upstairs.
Two parts of the Caleb Williams situation that factor into it for me, and I agree with the points that you're making about his health right now. I don't know how valuable this experience is right now, playing behind a bad offensive line that needs four new starters for 2025. They can keep Darnell Wright, but everyone else has got to go. And playing on a team where, like, the ship sunk a month ago or more. I mean, this is devolving. This is deteriorating. You really saw it in that San Francisco game. Less checking out, I think, in the Minnesota game. But, I mean, I have no reason to think that won't happen again. And the worst thing you could do would risk anything that compromises Caleb Williams for 2025. And that doesn't even have to be some kind of injury that keeps him out, that is so significant that it would keep him out of games. Anything that would hinder his offseason preparation with the new coach coming in, the new offense launching, and really a chance at a restart for Caleb Williams. You can't take that risk. You had an interesting exchange with, I believe it was Eric Washington, the Bears defensive coordinator, last week. And you asked him something about reflecting back on all of the issues that had led up to this point of the defense struggling. And him saying, well, no, we don't do that. And then you said, well, maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe you need to be more reflective. Was it Eric Washington? Do I have it right?
Yeah, that was last week.
I'm concerned that that is reflective of Hallis Hall at large, because while they may want to just push this aside and say, let's just forget this, let's just move forward, there needs to be a hard, hard look at how they ended up here, at how they had a search that included interviewing 9 offensive coordinator candidates, and they hired the 9th best guy out of that group. How they picked even their skill players, Mark, none of those guys are producing like you thought they would. DeAndre Swift looks like that's a concern. That's something where I don't know if he can give them what they need. He's going to end up with probably a season similar statistically to what he did in Philly, but he's not giving you last year, but he's not giving you the consistent 3 to 4 yards per game that you need. And they're having to use Roshon Johnson in short yardage situations, which totally telegraphs what they're going to be doing. You want a running back that can do both, and that's not really seeming to be the case. Their offensive line is the biggest problem, probably the biggest misjudgment on their roster was the offensive line. Ryan Poles thinking he had a league average offensive line with depth. He's had neither of those things. And then their defensive line has really materialized there other than Montez Sweat. And you see that he can't do it alone. What are the lessons that you're looking at that they should be learning from how they ended up with what could very well end up being a 4-13 team that they thought was going to be a playoff team?
I think it's a lesson, frankly, big picture, that is a part of the whole problem that that starts at the top at Hallis Hall, and that's just misjudgment. The things they value, the things they think are good, generally have not worked out. Like you talk about the offensive coordinator. They had a recent one where they made a judgment that, like we were talking about, like that in a situation where they needed a last-minute replacement for their left tackle, they made a judgment that this third-round rookie who never started before would be a better option than a veteran who has not played well and basically played himself out of a job. And that was, to me, that was a misjudgment. Not that Larry Borum would have been any better, but maybe you would have handled things better being a veteran as far as the noise, the snap count, this and that. But anyway, their judgment has not been good. What they value in players, what they value in coaches. So I think I guess the answer to your question is it's systemic. That's probably the thing. But we've been saying that for years. That's why the Bears, no matter how rosy things look, like they did at the beginning of this year, always end up in the same spot. So I'll be honest. What is the solution? I don't know. They better, you just hope that they fall into a situation like the Lions did and get the right coach and the right GM matched up, and then we get those offensive defensive lines to be the strength of the team, and then work from there. But who knows? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what other solution you can come up with, other than just changing everything, which I don't think they want to do again.
Well, let me hone in on one specific thing: the offensive line. The offensive line is the least interesting thing to read about or listen to a conversation about, I think, for most people, but it's so critical, it's so important. And the question that I would that I want to ask you, that I think strikes at a bigger picture than let's break down left guard play and right guard play, things like that: how does a team that is run by 2 former offensive linemen have such a bad offensive line, and going into their 4th year of Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham in charge of football decisions at Hallis Hall, they only have 1 starting offensive lineman for 2025.
Well, again, that goes to what I was just talking about as far as just their judgment is just poor. What, Ryan Poles, certainly, he's done some good things here. You know, said this is the best. I think he said this is the best depth we've ever had, or I've ever had. I can't remember how he phrased it, but he absolutely loved the depth, and the depth has been a huge problem. A, that they've needed it, that's a problem, but also that they, you know, they were put in this situation Monday because their depth was bad. It wasn't that Larry Borden was hurt; he just wasn't good enough, and so they had to go do something that they probably shouldn't have done and put a rookie in. So yeah, no, his judgment on what makes a good offensive line, you know, those things work out great when Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, you know, and he makes a lot of things look good. And so when you come from a place like Kansas City, you don't know exactly, is it our guy's expertise about players, or is it the quarterback making everybody look good? And I think it's the quarterback, the head coach, everybody looking bad. I think it gave a little bit of a misread on exactly just how good Ryan Poles is at doing those kinds of things, because frankly, his judgment on a lot of things has been way off, even the things he values. Like another thing, like I wrote about this earlier this week, this whole idea of resilience that he talked about Monday on the pregame show. And I just think that's
a throwback to the George McCaskey telling Matt Nagy that he did a great job having a 6-game losing streak.
I not only do I think it's like a cliche, I just think it's wrong. I think, you know, hey, God bless these guys. They're all good guys and stuff like that. And it's tough that they're in a bad spot. But they've shown the exact opposite of resilience. I mean, they had one bad play, a Hail Mary, and they have totally crumbled and never responded in any way whatsoever. That's the opposite of resilience. Resilience isn't that they all like each other, nobody's at each other's throats, you know, and nobody's literally quit.
And they still lace up their cleats on Sunday.
Yeah, like, right. That's not resilience. So anyway, they value this resilience that I don't think is overvalued, and that's my main criticism of just the way they do things here, is they overvalue the wrong things. They always have, and so you know, with all due respect to everybody, I know they work hard, but It's so obvious that they're not getting it done. And I go back to that whole thing about what they value and that whole resilience thing. And they're kind of so proud of themselves for like not quitting. I just don't think that's a good thing to value.
You brought up the Hail Mary in Washington, which was their first of 8 losses, a game where Caleb Williams gave them the lead in the final minute. And Tyreek Stevenson, obviously, at the center of that. This is where my mind is at, by the way, Mark. I'm full on to 2025 at this point. My question about Tyreek Stevenson for you is, what would you do with Tyreek Stevenson in this coming offseason? What do you do with this guy?
Well, that's interesting. You're talking to a guy, I've been a huge fan of Tyreek as far as just a player, and that he just has always seemed to me to be one of these guys who I kind of liken him to, like when Peter Tillman came in here. And, you know, at the beginning, they're kind of rookies, but boy, there's something about, they got a certain kind of attitude that, you know, someday this guy's going to be really good. And, you know, Tillman obviously became a Pro Bowl player and one of the best Bears of all time. And I just saw that kind of thing in Tyreek. He's just a professional quarterback. And he had but I tell you, he's displayed some of those, but boy, he's been everything else but that, I think, since then. So I guess what I'm saying is, it's tricky. It's a guy who, like, a certain coach might like him. And a certain coach, here's the thing, a certain coach might be able to make something of him and manage him better than these guys have, because he has not been managed well. And that, I think...
He still doesn't understand. Had an exclusive with him last week that I read in the Sun-Times. He still doesn't understand how he screwed up the Hail Mary. He knows he shouldn't have been gabbing with fans, but he still doesn't even understand how him going rogue and doing his own thing in the middle of that scrum led to the touchdown. Like, that's a guy that has not gotten the message.
I tell you, and I think he's more expendable, especially when you got a guy, usually you don't even have a Terrell Smith to replace him. You know what I'm saying? There's, usually it's got to keep him. But I'll say this. I think John Hoke's one of the best secondary coaches in the league. I think it's been proven. He's the guy who coached Tillman. And if he can't get through to a guy like Tyreek, to me that's defining. That means it's not going to happen. You know, so I just feel like if it would under Hoke, it would happen, and it hasn't. And so and here's the other thing about Tyreek, is that this wasn't just the Hail Mary, but they knew they had issues with him that they've been trying to coach out
of
him.
This was brewing
almost literally since his like first or second preseason game. Mm-hmm. So I know they're not lax about that. Certainly Eberflus, I don't think he was, and I know John Hoke wasn't. If they can't get through to the guy, then He's only going to be of value to a team that can kind of a super team, a Super Bowl team that can just kind of like Martellus Bennett, I always said about him. On the only team he could win a Super Bowl with was the Patriots, and that's the only team he won a Super Bowl. He would be a divisive guy on almost any team, like he was here. And I feel this almost the same way about Tyreek, is that there's a place for him in the league, but it's with like the Chiefs, you know,
yeah.
or the Ravens maybe, yeah. or whatever.
Yeah.
But here it's probably not going to work. So my guess, well, we'll see what happens. But my guess, I think the next staff, you know, if they moved on, it wouldn't surprise me.
I think he's got to go. And yeah. at three reasons, or I could probably come up with more than three, but one would be, I think it's symbolic of that he is the poster boy for this season.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one player, and right. it's for that Hail Mary. Two, you're loaded at corner, like you said.
Yeah.
You actually could, you know, he's expendable. He's expendable right now. This is one of the things with Tyreek Stevenson is he's not giving you the play between the lines to justify all
right.
of the other stuff.
Well, yeah.
Terrell Smith is playing more snaps than him yeah. in a lot of these games, especially recently.
Yeah.
But third, I don't think that while Tyreek Stevenson on paper would be valuable to you as a
yeah.
player, to have and much more valuable than whatever sixth round pick you're going to get for him in a trade. What about Tyreek Stevenson's time here would tell you that he is going to embrace a backup role or a special teams role? I don't
yeah.
think that's going to happen. He stormed out of practice when they told him he was going to miss the
yeah.
first series of the Cardinals game. I just don't see him. I don't see it being tenable to keep him here. If I were the Bears, I would look to trade him.
No, oh, yeah.
And it's going to be a total loss on the draft
yeah.
investment. That's
yeah.
another mark on the wrong side of the ledger for Ryan Poles. And if you can't trade him, if you can't get anything, it's better to cut him than to keep him
yeah,
around.
Yeah, you can't keep him unless you can manage him into a viable starting player.
I think you already know that you can't.
And that's the only way you can do that. And here's the other thing about he's kind of a tease at this point. He's not even like, well, he's producing so much. How much can you stay? He's not producing enough. Even in the Hail Mary game, he had already given up a 61-yard pass in that game, if you remember.
Well, look at the stuff that Jair Alexander does in
yeah.
Green Bay. But he's so good that
yeah.
it's
right.
that you
That's
tolerate
my point.
It.
Is, yeah, is Tyreek has not. He's had too many mistakes that he doesn't even acknowledge, including that 61-yard. You know,
And if you're still mad at him about that, his message was, have a nice life.
Have a nice life, yeah. yeah. But I love you. You know, I like the guy, but I just wish he was better about something.
When he said, I love you, did he mean, like, all of us? Or did he mean just
everybody,
you specifically,
all the people,
Mark
Bottas?
All
the critics.
All people.
All the critics, yeah.
Okay.
Who brand him just by that one play, the Hail Mary. Unfortunately, he's had very many, including he was fined for tripping, I can't remember who it was,
Jameson Williams of the
yeah.
Lions.
Yeah.
That
claims
play,
he did not do that.
That
yeah.
video, man, when you watch the video,
yeah.
and then we'll move on
yeah.
from Tyreek Stevenson, but when you watch the video, because it didn't get flagged in real time.
Yeah.
Nobody knew about it till after the fact.
Yeah.
When you watch the video, you can't tell
yeah.
whether Tyreek actually trips him until Jameson Williams is running back on the
yeah.
field past Tyreek, and you see this giant smile on Tyreek's face as
yeah.
he says something to Jameson
yeah.
Williams. That's the part how I know that Tyreek tripped him on purpose.
I think he's like one of those Grayson Allen type guys who, like, they do things.
Everyone's
they don't
looking
know.
For it.
They
now.
Don't know. They don't really know. I mean, they do these stupid things and they're
like
aggravated.
He's like
but
a compulsive
they,
liar.
Like, don't get
he doesn't
it.
Even
yeah,
realize
right.
that he
they don't
doesn't.
Get it. Like, Grayson Allen's like, what? What did I do? What did I do? And every time. And he just, you know, he hammers, I can't remember, Alex Caruso or something.
Yeah,
I can't
yeah,
remember.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's like, well, what, you know, what me? You know, it's like the Bill Laimbeer thing in Sports Illustrated. What? Me? Foul? You know? So I think certain guys, I'm serious about this, certain guys are kind of like that. They're just so physical or they're so annoying or whatever that they don't realize what they're doing.
Well, and then,
and
then you get a reputation.
Like yeah.
And then you get a reputation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Tyreek Stevenson, who probably needs a lot of leeway to avoid getting personal
yeah.
foul penalties in games, is going to get almost no margin
yeah.
for that because
yeah.
they're looking for it. You've
yeah.
got this reputation
yeah.
now. This stuff is on film. The fines are on
yeah.
record. Mark, let's talk about the Lions game briefly here. The picks are in for the Sun-Times. Big game for who? For the Lions, it's a big game. They need
yeah.
to bounce back.
Yeah, yeah, right.
The Lions, I think, are they in a three-way tie atop the NFC North or the NFC right now?
12-2, yeah.
All Eagles
yeah.
and Vikings also both 12-2. All six of our writers picked the Lions. And Patsy, you have the Lions the closest If I'm seeing this correctly, yes. You have the Lions winning 30-24 against the Bears. Covering. Bears covering in that scenario, I believe.
I do, by the hook. Yeah.
I'm not
confident in that pick. I just feel like the Bears have played them well. Even when the Bears aren't good, they've played them well. The game is at Soldier Field. The Lions have six of their week one defensive starters on IR right now, so they have less than half their original starting defense. And they're at a point where, you know, they could withstand the loss of Aiden Hutchinson, which was a credit to them. But even though they've been playing with that, I've seen this with Bears defenses. You reach a breaking point where you might lose somebody who's relatively insignificant, but that breaks the dam. And I think that's happened, at least against good teams in the last 2 weeks against the Packers and Bills, where, wow, now it really hurts that he's not there because you don't have the back end. You don't have the help in the back end. And so I feel like I think the Bears have a chance to exploit that, but I have very little confidence in that pick. If you could rate, you know how you like your rate of your picks?
Mm-hmm.
Mine would be very low for that.
Yeah, so your pick is, yes, the pick that you read in the paper is Mark's pick.
Yeah.
But Mark wouldn't be surprised by something totally different than that. I would not be surprised if it didn't
work. Yes, right. I can actually be wrong. So really my pick is Lions to cover.
Rick Morrissey and I both have Lions by 15.
Yeah.
Scoop Jackson has Lions by 14. Patrick Finley has Lions by 10. And Rick Tellender has Lions by 11. All the injuries that Detroit has had defensively, I do think that Bears will do okay offensively, but that still is only, I mean, you have the Bears taking advantage of that injured defense to score 24 points. I mean, that's it, which would be just like plan the parade for that if you're the Bears, because that's pretty good.
They could get special teams or defense.
I've got them around there. I've got them scoring 25 points, but losing 40-25.
Okay.
I mean, you just saw the Bills and Lions both put up 40 against each other. The Lions scored 42 in that loss to the Bills,
right. 40,
which is pretty good defense. And you're right that this is an opportunity, but I am not confident in the Bears cashing in on the opportunity.
No, I don't think they can. I don't think they're going to win the game. In fact, they can't. The Bears are in no position to win a shootout. Now, they haven't won a shootout in years. I mean, the Bears have the longest streak in the league. They've lost 26 consecutive games, which they've allowed 21 points. The next closest team to them has 11. I mean, they are like the least likely team to win a shootout in the NFL. I think they're 0-25 in the 3 years of Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. And that's significant mainly because the Lions are averaging 36 points a game over their last 11 games. I mean, they're really on fire offensively. They lose Montgomery, maybe that makes a difference. Maybe that allows Jahmyr Gibbs to be even better than he is. You know, that wouldn't surprise me either. So who knows? But anyway, I think that the Lions will score a lot of points, especially against this defense that's not been playing well. And I don't see the Bears being able to score. To outscore them, just because, like I said, they have not. That streak is really something else.
Let me ask you one more thing, big picture, and then we'll get out of here. Bears and Lions. Lions were an easy win for them for so long. If I took you back to 2021, the final year of Matt Nagy, when Justin Fields is in his rookie season, the Bears go 6-11. They fire Nagy. They fire Ryan Pace. They restart everything. Meanwhile, that same season, 2021, the Lions go 3-13-1. If I had told you then that the Lions were so much closer than the Bears, most people probably would not have believed that. But the Lions showed clear progress from there. It is clear progress. They were building in the right places. They had young talent that they drafted at premium positions. They went from 3-13-1 to 8-9 last year being a contender and being a quarter and a half away from going to the Super Bowl,
yep,
to this year being one of the favorites to win it. Why has that gone so well? The Bears have made no progress. Mark, the Bears are about to maybe finish with a comparable record to what they had in the burndown year.
The answer is that there is no reason why that has gone well, and I say that because the Lions have historically been just as dysfunctional, if not more so, than the Bears. That's the lesson. Is that it can happen to the Lions, it can happen to the Bears, because they had the same They had the same exact concurrent GM coach search that the Bears had. And then even more so, I think we've talked about this before, you know, they hired Brad Holmes as their GM, and then he basically said Dan Campbell is – they basically said Dan Campbell's your coach. They didn't even go through the whole charade of like they do with
like
Poles,
the
where Cole said,
yeah,
this is my – Matt Eberflus is my guy.
They found him.
They basically paired up the GM and the coach, and it still got it right. And this is a franchise that has not won NFL championships since 1957. And has been, like I said, I think they made the playoffs. This will be the third year in a row winning. The Bears haven't done that since the 80s. The Lions haven't done that since the very early 90s under Wayne Fonts. So my point is they're in the same exact boat as the Bears. They were in 2021, the same exact boat as the Bears, and they somehow got it right. But, you know, that's how it happened. I mean, the Glazers have won two Super Bowls in Tampa. I mean, they don't know. They're not any more rooted in football than the McCaskies are, frankly, even less so. And so it can happen. But I think that's what I just said was true. But on the other hand, when you're pointing to the outliers as kind of your hope, which is what the Bears always do, mm-hmm. that's an issue. That's a problem. It's, you know, what are the odds that it's going to happen to them? You know, it's they keep rolling the dice. So. I can't remember what the question was, but
you answered it.
I think the answer is that if it could happen to the Lions, maybe it could happen to the Bears. But they were in no better position to get it more right than the Bears were, because they were just as dysfunctional as the Bears for many years.
It's one of the most maddening things about following the Bears is seeing it look so easy everywhere else.
Yeah.
Just somebody else, they find a quarterback. The Vikings found a quarterback that they could play this year. The Vikings lost Kirk Cousins to an injury and then free agency. Then they draft a guy in the top 10 who gets hurt for the whole year, J.J. McCarthy. And they take Sam Darnold, who'd been on a couple other teams and it hadn't worked out, and they make him into an MVP candidate. The Lions are at ground zero in 2021, and here they are seeing if they can hold it together to make a run for a championship this year. It's maddening. And the Bears probably not going to win another game unless someone lets them, unless Seattle is so injured that they can't play with them, or unless Green Bay just checks out, which would be sits their starters. That would be the saddest way for the Bears to end their losing streak in that rivalry, if they even could. Then, I mean, it's really hard to pick them against anybody, especially, you know, you look at some of the losses that the Bears had this year to the Colts, the Patriots, etc. You can follow Mark Potash and I online. You can follow Patrick Finley on Twitter, on our Sun-Times website. If you go to the Sun-Times Bears page, you're going to find a compilation of all the stuff that we write throughout the week that not only looks at the game, but looks at big picture. And we will be back with you guys Sunday after Bears-Lions. Thanks for listening to House Intrigue.